Welcome to Perfectly Unfiltered, the podcast where I have perfectly unfiltered conversations with real people sharing real stories about redefining roles at home and in the workplace. I will also be talking with changemakers, learning what they are doing to open the doors for women and the realities of creating a diverse and inclusive workforce. Together, we can build a community where we all win. I'm your host, Noor Haisham Fawaz, and this is Perfectly Unfiltered. Welcome to a new episode of Perfectly Unfiltered. I'm your host, Noor Haisham Fawaz, and I'm glad to welcome my next guest, Helga Riedel. Helga Riedel is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Enwin Group of Companies. Helga is a Chartered Professional Accountant and was awarded the designation of Fellow of the Chartered Professional Accountants in 2018. She is a C-suite executive with more than 35 years of progressively responsible experience in the private and public sectors, including utilities, municipal government, financial services, education, bottling, and audit. Helga, along with Enwin, have been a huge supporter of Build a Dream, whether it's moderating our diversity and inclusion panels or showcasing to young women the many different career pathways at Enwin, to supporting our signature career discovery expos, and to joining me on this podcast to discuss not only her career journey, but Enwin's investment in diversity and inclusion. I have no doubt that the listeners will learn so many great tips from Helga's career journey as a leader in the utilities sector, but also the impact and the commitment she made to adopt a more diverse and inclusive practice at Enwin. She talks about diversity training, importance of diversity partnerships, piloting the blind recruitment process, and engaging her staff in the grassroots committee to ensure they play a role in the decisions and the innovation happening at Enwin. Helga discusses her own path to her position and offers some great advice for young women aspiring to leadership positions. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I loved catching up with Helga, and I have no doubt that you'll be able to take away some great tips, tools, and resources that will help you along your career journey and along your diversity and inclusion commitment. Welcome to the show, Helga. It's such an honor to be talking to you today.
Well, thanks so much, Noor. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's been a while since the global pandemic. I haven't seen you at local community events, so it's really exciting to be able to get caught up today.
Yeah, there haven't been any local community events, unfortunately. It will be great to get back to that one day.
Yeah, it's been at least a year, so hopefully the sooner the better. It'll be great to see some familiar faces in person. So I wanted to start off our interview by talking to you about your role at Enwin and what brought you to this position.
Well, as you probably know, I'm the president and CEO of Enwin, and I really came into this role very directly from the city of Windsor. I was the chief administrative officer for the city for almost 7 years prior to this role, and the city owns Enwin. The city holds the shares in Enwin and Windsor Canada Utilities, our parent holding company. And my contract at the city was coming to an end and I wanted a change, and this opportunity presented itself. The timing was amazing and I was able to move into this leadership role. And quite frankly, without a lot of background in the utility technical side of things, as most people know, we provide water and electricity service to Windsor and water to actually surrounding towns as well. And my background is not technical. I'm an accountant, but I've been a leader of large organizations for quite some time. And really that was the fit for me, was the ability to lead an organization.
So you talked about you're an accountant and you also have your bachelor's in education.
Yeah, that was a bit of an interesting story. So I took business in university when I graduated high school, and then I worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers. Well, at the time, it was just PricewaterhouseCoopers. Now it's PricewaterhouseCoopers. So I worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers at the time and obtained my chartered accountant designation. That's changed too. Now it's called CPA. So I'm a CPA, CA. And then I worked there for 3 years, and then I moved to Harmacher & Sons. And I worked in the U.S. companies for 7 years at Hiram Walker. I had actually all three of my children at Hiram Walker. My maternity leaves were there. The company was going through a lot during those years. It was purchased by an overseas United Kingdom company called Allied Lions PLC. And it just reorganized continuously during my 7 years that I was there. And, as many women face, it's hard to have 3 children, which I had at the time during those years, and work in a demanding job. My job, although I didn't start in this role, I moved through various positions during those 7 years. And ultimately, I was manager of accounting for the U.S. companies. And it was fairly big job and lots of opportunity to travel, but with 3 small children, that's not always that easy. So I made the decision to go back to leave the company and go back to school for a year, and I did my Bachelor of Education degree.
So did you practice as an educator?
No, I didn't. I mean, other than practice teaching, of course, which everyone has to do. But no, what happened was when I finished my, it was a 1-year program at the time. I think it's a 2-year now, but at the time it was a 1-year program. So I finished my year, usually finish around May. And it so happened that there was a job vacancy offered at the Essex County Board of Education. This was before the school boards all amalgamated. So eventually it became the Greater Essex County District School Board. But at the time, it was a job opening as a controller of finance for the Essex County Board of Education. And, it just seemed like, I don't know what the right word is, but it just seemed like the right timing that that would come up with my background as an accountant and having just finished a year at the Faculty of Education. And there were no teaching jobs then. As you know, there have been, limited teaching opportunities full-time for many, many years. I also wasn't too sure that's what I was cut out for after I'd done the year of education. I think my business background and accounting suited me a little more. So this was just the perfect opportunity, and I was fortunate enough to get the job. I applied through the normal channels and was lucky enough to get the job. I think my teaching degree maybe gave me that edge over the other, I'm sure, very qualified accountants that applied. And so that launched me into the public sector after 10 years of the private sector, being Hiram Walker and Pricewaterhouse. This gave me my first taste of a public sector organization. And it was pretty interesting and exciting and very surprising to me. I had not expected that at all. Some of the things I learned at the board and the opportunities I was given were amazing as well.
What was the biggest surprise going from the private sector into the public sector?
Yeah, I didn't really follow politics before this leap that I made. I didn't pay a whole lot of, other than paying my taxes, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what was going on in government. I was a busy mom raising 3 kids and working in the private sector. So I really learned about the role of our political leaders. I learned about how decisions were made and, the democratic process, how much debate went into decisions. And I learned quite a bit about how much these decisions, sometimes made not locally, but from, Queen's Park or even further, can impact employees. At the time that I joined the school board, the social contract was just implemented. And you'd have to be as old as I am, I guess, to know what that is or have worked in the public sector for quite some time. But, with the stroke of a pen, our salaries were changed. We were told to take days away from work, but the workload wasn't changed. So it was quite an eye-opener for me, something that would never happen in the private sector. For me, it was okay because I was a mom raising 3 children and I had a job that I was just learning. So it was just a learning experience for me overall. It created a lot of unhappiness throughout these organizations, which were all public sector organizations at the time. So we weren't alone, but it was definitely a learning experience about how politics works and how decisions were made.
Well, I'm sure that has really informed and provided you the experience and knowledge and background to further your career within the public sector. And I want to get to that. But before I do, I find it really interesting that you highlighted your role as a mother and then making that really difficult decision in your role at Hiram Walker to say, with the busy traveling schedule and the demand within my role, I need to explore a different opportunity. And you started teaching, which I've heard so many young women through our role at Build a Dream wanting to become teachers because they highlight the work-life balance and the family-life balance and the opportunity to have summers off when they have children. But then you went into the public sector while you worked in education. But I'm sure it didn't make it easier. If anything, I think it from the sounds of it was a little bit harder because now you were in a completely different sector. So what advice do you have for young women that don't feel that they can have both a very successful career and be great mothers?
Yeah. Well, let me first of all say that I didn't know what teaching would be like until I got into the Faculty of Education. And I learned how hard many, many teachers work and the extras they do for their kids. So I think what's conducive to family life is the schedule. You know, the times that teachers are expected to be at work are the same times as children are expected to be at school. So more or less, it generally aligns, which is what you don't really get in the business world. So that's what I thought might be an advantage. But you have to be adaptable to the teaching ranks. And it has to be, you know, your calling, or you're not going to do that great job that I saw so many teachers doing. What advice do I have? You know, anybody who wants to have a career and advance in the career and work really does need a support system around them. I was lucky enough to have a great family support system. And I also had, you know, my husband, who was very understanding of my goals in terms of my career. It can't be that way for everyone. Many women don't have that family support around them, but you have to build a network of friends, aunts, uncles, cousins, other people who can step in. And not so much every day, but in emergencies, because, you know, children always get sick at school, or mine used to, you know, hit each other with, I had boys, so they were always getting into some kind of a playground calamity at school, and I'd have to pick them up and take them to emergency, or someone would. So you do need that support mechanism around you. Sometimes it's an understanding employer who, you know, has some flexibility, but, you know, during the years that I was building my career, it was really important to be there and get the work done and be visible. And of course, when you're a manager of staff, once you have staff reporting to you, it's important to be there for them. And so it gets harder to be flexible as you rise in your career. I think people think it's easier. It's actually harder because there are just more demands. So I would say build the support network is probably the best advice I can give to working mothers. And that can be anyone. Family's the best, but if you can't do that, find another way because you're going to need it.
I can definitely share in that because, you know, as you know, I just had my baby girl a few months ago, and I have a 3-year-old son who's absolutely wild. And I joke that I have eyes behind my head because he just climbs on everything. And but I often say we couldn't have done what we were able to do, like going back to school, my husband and I, and me leading an organization without the support of my in-laws and my mom, who would, between my in-laws and my mom's house, Adam was there often on the weekends. So when we were in school or when we were studying, I think that that's really important, the support system. But you touch on a really important point, and that's the schedule. And so teaching is very conducive to the family life balance, because when kids are in school, you're teaching. And then when school is done, you're able to go home. But as you advance in your career, it got harder to balance that schedule. What advice do you have for women in that role that have the opportunity to advance, but beyond the support system are unsure how to make it work?
Well, I guess a couple of things. First of all, I mean, my spouse and I would alternate evenings working late, you know, we set up a schedule that worked for us. But I've already mentioned support mechanisms. So maybe what I'll say is a couple of things. First of all, you know, a long time ago in my career, early in my career, we had training on how to manage our schedules. And one of the things I learned was that you put everything on one schedule. You put your work meetings and your kids' soccer games and your doctor's appointments, and everything goes on one schedule. Because if you try to separate the two, which I probably did early in my, you know, career and having children, you can't keep track of it all. And so I actually took a training course on this, and it told you to put it all on one schedule so that you can find the ways through it. You allow for driving time, allow for everything you need. Then you can check with your supervisor or whoever you report to and say, listen, I've got to be away for 2 hours and then I'll be back and I'll be working in the evening or whatever. But if you don't have it all in one spot, you can't make those decisions and those correct assessments, and you end up being very disorganized. So I guess that's a practical tip. The other thing I would say is that I find workplaces now are a lot more flexible. Things are very different than they were, I hate to say it, almost 40 years ago when I started my career. It's about 39 years, I think, to be exact. Things have changed a lot, and workplaces do acknowledge, you know, they want to attract women, and they do acknowledge that there are some different needs. And honestly, the men and women in our organization are expecting that flexibility as well, because the, you know, the duties are shared now. They're not the way they were 40, 50, 60 years ago. So for whether you're male or female, you know, that kind of planning and organizing and sharing of the duties is really what workplaces are now allowing flexibility for. There are some that can't. For instance, if you are a teacher in a classroom, you can't leave that classroom. But most office or work environments can afford some flexibility, and I hope they are. I hope they do. We try to do it at NWIN.
I appreciate that you highlighted family practices or policies to be flexible, because it's both the father and the mother or the guardian of the child that is requiring the flexibility. Mm-hmm. And I often share the importance of companies to start evaluating the importance of having that flexible schedule and not assuming that it's going to be their female employees or female recruits that are going to demand, or not demand, but ask for that flexibility. Because in my case right now, my husband was the one that decided to take the parental leave. Mm-hmm. And so if the company was assuming that my husband would never take a parental leave and they had this whole plan, perfect, picture perfect plan, they would be missing out on really much needed time where they could have evaluated it differently. So we're often talking to companies in manufacturing and construction to really begin now, because the workforce is changing and COVID has disrupted so many of the assumptions that we had made.
Yes.
In the past. And although it's been a setback for a lot of women and women having to leave because of their family duties, many women are balancing work life at home while homeschooling or helping their kids through virtual learning. So I know that companies, for some that weren't flexible, have been forced to be flexible during these times. And I'm hoping that those are great examples for them to continue once things settle down with the COVID pandemic. That being said, I appreciate your whole mindset around the importance of flexibility and recognizing that there are particular needs for your staff. And NWIN has made a significant commitment to diversity and inclusion practices within your company. Can you highlight some of those promises and initiatives that you've launched both internally and partnerships that you've made externally to not only support your internal staff, but help recruit and retain a more diverse workforce?
Sure. I'll do my best to do this justice. I think it's a journey, quite frankly. I wouldn't say, as much as NWIN has tried to make changes in this sort of area, I wouldn't say we're fully there yet, but I can tell you some of the things we've worked on. First of all, on the overall diversity and inclusion, we've done training through the Multicultural Council at the board of director level and at the management level. We want that training to be shared with our entire staff group this year. We've hit a couple of bumps in the road in terms of training delivery, but we're still committed to ensuring that that is delivered. And that's really on the inclusiveness front. Employees need to understand different cultures and different ways of doing things and learn how to embrace that. And so that's what the training is all about. In terms of diversity, you know, NWIN being electricity and water is a very traditional business, very male dominated in those technical fields, and then almost female dominated, although that's changing in our office positions, such as the call center, for example. We do have a number of men joining us in the call center, though, so that's changing, but it's harder to get females into the very technical fields of, you know, power line workers and water distribution operators and maintainers. We hope that they pursue those educations at the college, and we are looking at potentially even some scholarship programs to try and promote that. And we, of course, participate in your programs to try and convince young women students out there to join in those programs. And we're a big participant with West, which assists immigrant women. And we advertise all of our jobs there and hope to recruit immigrants into the country who actually have just amazing education and skills that we can use. Of course, it depends on our openings and how that all aligns, but we have changed our advertising practices. One of the things that we have done now, last year was an experiment with it, and this year as well, I participated in it actually. we are looking at how best to do blind recruitments. And it's been a struggle, I have to say. Blind recruitments to us means that the interviewing manager, as they're making selections from applicants for interviews, isn't really able to sort of bring any accidental biases into it. So they don't know the name of the person, they don't know the gender of the person, or where the schools were located, that kind of thing. It's been a struggle, though, to try and, it's a lot of work. Sometimes when we advertise jobs, the biggest one I've seen is 800 applicants. And how do you filter all of that information for 800 applicants? And so we've tried a few manual efforts. We're experimenting with software, and our HR team, especially our manager of HR, has been a huge advocate of, you know, working on methods to make that happen at NWIN. So we're still in the early stages of that, but we've definitely done some trials on it. And I think the final thing I guess I'd highlight that we're doing at NWIN is we do have a staff grassroots committee that was assembled by our HR manager. I think that they started, if I remember correctly, in 2019. And the whole purpose behind that was to make sure that employees weren't being excluded. In other words, we were being inclusive at NWIN in terms of hearing input and feedback and innovative ideas from all staff, not just management or not just certain staff. So that committee is still very active 2 years later. They've brought ideas forward, and we want to encourage that as much as possible. So that was really started under the sort of banner of equity, diversity, and inclusion. And they've brought us a number of recommendations, and we hope they continue. And they're very active in trying to help us with our recruitment practices and some of our other things that our other initiatives that we're trying to undertake on that front. I should say too, we also engage with the community. Barbara Pierce Marshall, our manager of communications and public relations, has also been very engaged with the Multicultural Council, trying to support their programs, media messaging around, you know, that aligns with NWIN's messages as well. So I guess the other thing that we are working on is NWIN has joined with other electricity utilities on a diversity accord. We actually signed us on a number of years ago. And the goal at that time was diversity and increasing opportunities for females in the electricity sector, because as I've mentioned, it is very male dominated. The electricity accord, though, has recently been expanded to enable or promote, I guess, a more diverse workforce reflective of the ethnicity of the communities that we serve. And so they've taken it to another level. And the way they promote that is by making us accountable, actually. Every year we need to submit our statistics on gender diversity in the workforce, and also now in future on our ethnic diversity in the workforce. So we've joined that accord, and that's another initiative that falls in line with our commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion. I will also say that I do and have certainly accelerated my messaging around, you know, Black Lives Matter to the staff, reminders that we should be inclusive and not discriminatory, and more recently even anti-Asian sentiment, which has picked up. And, you know, so I'm trying to be very cognizant of what's happening in the community and reminding our team that those kinds of things are not NWIN's, you know, and what NWIN represents. And so we work on all of these things.
It's great to speak to a leader who has not only embraced the importance of diversity and inclusion, but you've adopted different practices and initiatives to touch on all areas within your workforce. So you highlighted the work that you're doing with the Multicultural Council of Windsor and providing training for the board and also your management team. You highlighted the blind recruitment. Although there's still some tweaks that you're doing, you're touching at it from the recruitment stage. The work that you do with Build a Dream in not only highlighting women at NWIN or attending our signature career discovery event where your staff interact with young women in grade school and high school, but also their parents. So that's from the awareness piece, but also the important and valuable work that you've done through the Leadership Accord on Gender Diversity to look at your data, to measure the numbers and the progress that you've made. Because every company that I've talked to or association that is highlighting what needs to be done to truly move the needle forward, they mentioned the importance of data. A company must measure where they're currently at, look at the data, and then effectively track the initiatives year after year to ensure that they are making progress. And I think that leaders like you are what it's going to take to really move the needle forward, because it starts from the top and trickles all the way down. And having worked with Barbara Peace Marshall and some of the other employees at Enwin, I know that this is shared with so many on the front lines. And I just have to say that we've been such proud partners of Enwin. And I just want to thank you for the work that you continue to do to move the needle forward and diversify your workforce.
Well, thanks for that compliment, Noor. I mean, it's just what we should be doing and doing our best at. And it is a continuous improvement process. I wouldn't say we're there yet, or we haven't reached the peak of where we want to be. But all we can do, as you point out, is get better year after year. On the front of statistics and tracking, though, I have to say that we're a little bit at the mercy of our staff. Now, sometimes people don't want to bring information forward about, you know, ethnicity or gender, that type of thing. And you know, I would encourage anyone listening to this to participate in those surveys. I really don't think your employer, certainly not at Enwin, would we use that in any negative way. We don't want to breach privacy. That's always a concern as well. But we can't measure if we're getting better if we don't have the statistics. So sometimes that's the challenge. And I really, truly encourage employees, if they're asked to complete employment surveys, please do it so that we can obtain that higher level of tracking and that continuous improvement in the whole area.
And I really appreciate you encouraging employees to fill out that survey, because you are right. Without the data or the statistics, it's really hard to pinpoint the area that companies need to work on to further their diversity and inclusion goals. And for those that are listening, because you did mention the blind recruitment and, you know, posting a position and having 800 applicants, and you've tried different approaches to ensure that, or to try to, as best as you can, have that blind recruitment. Where is Enwin currently at in that process? And what advice do you have for those that are listening in that feel that this might be a really great practice that they would like to adopt?
So you know, just on blind recruitment, I guess what I would say is that when we get a lot of applications and our poor HR folks who have to go through those resumes, and then if we're trying to do blind, I mean, going through them without blinding them and redacting them is already a huge job, to find out who's most qualified and so forth. But when they try to blind it for the hiring manager, it's very challenging because, you know, blocking out pieces of information make it difficult for the hiring manager to determine if the experience of the person they're looking at is really conducive to a job at Enwin. What we're looking at now is we'll either do it through software or through our own creation of online key questions for our applicants, so that applicants just fill in some kind of identifier, perhaps it's a number, some kind of key information, years of experience, education level, and not necessarily schools attended, but type of work done in their past. So we're experimenting with that now. That's our next step in the evolution of blind recruitment. And certainly we're also looking for software that might assist us with this, because it is a tremendous amount of work in human resources who haven't gotten at it resources to do these things, unintended bias from our screening processes. And I do say unintended biases, because what our managers are really looking for is the right qualifications and experience. But, you know, we're humans, and we learned a little bit in our training from the Multicultural Council about these biases that we could accidentally bring into any process we do, really, including recruitment, and how to try and filter that out. So, again, this is a learning process. It's a change in practices here in North America and Canada and at Enwin that we really have to work through and learn how to deal with as immigration increases into our country and as education comes from different places.
You highlighted the tremendous amount of work that is required, and that's just in one initiative that Enwin is experimenting with. For those that are just starting out, they realize the importance, it's the right thing to do, things have to change beyond just the skills labor shortage that Canada has been highlighting for over 10 years and getting more individuals into the skill trades. What advice do you give to a small company that may not even have a quarter of the resources to start? Where would they start?
Well, I mean, I don't consider Enwin to be that large of a company. We have 300 employees. There might be many that are much smaller. Honestly, it is a challenge. I don't know that I have the perfect solution. I think as long as a company, regardless of size, has the will to start looking at some of these changes, really, I think some of our smaller organizations can be more innovative than even larger ones, which are sometimes subject to bureaucracy and so forth. I really do think some of our smaller organizations are going to be better at this than maybe an Enwin or some of the larger places I've worked for. We need to rely on software. We have many, many applicants. I think what smaller organizations probably are better served doing is working with organizations like West and Build a Dream and the schools primarily, because it starts with young adults coming out of school that have the training and need apprenticeships and that kind of thing. So probably my best advice is to work with the school system on what you're looking for and try to gain that.
That's great advice. And that's another area that Enwin participates with, hiring co-op students from the University of Windsor, supporting women's enterprise skills training clients by providing them internships. That's something that we didn't even highlight during our chat so far.
Right. Yeah, and not just the University of Windsor, St. Clair College as well, because our power line workers and those working in the water area and in the meter shop and some of our other skilled trade areas often come out of the college, and we have partnerships with the college for those power line workers. And then the university with engineering graduates and co-op work terms and so forth. So we work with both institutions. We have a small scholarship at each institution, and we are looking at anything else we can do to promote both gender diversity coming out of those schools and into our programs, as well as helping to support the education that we need in our workplace.
Is there a particular success story that comes to mind or something that you're very proud of when you reflect on the journey Enwin is taking in this space?
I think really, you know, I don't want to point. We have an increasing number of, I guess, female engineers at Enwin, and we are actively recruiting. And I would say I'm very proud of the fact that they are strong leaders in the organization and are willing to lend their volunteer time to helping promote for other women to join our ranks. I'm just very proud of the fact that we are embarking on these initiatives and no one's put up their hand and said, stop it. So I think the organization gradually is starting to embrace these changes. And that's really probably what I'm most proud of. And I guess I'd also have to cite our manager of human resources for leading these initiatives and pushing us down these paths. She started doing this, I would suggest, well before the pandemic, well before the Black Lives Matter movement. She's very actively engaged. So I think she got a head start on these things, and I'm pretty proud of that too.
And we actually celebrated her at Build a Dream International Day of the Girl.
Yes, you did.
For all of her efforts. So it's something that does not go unrecognized, both internally at Enwin and within the community. So Rosanna Kemsley has played a significant role
in
supporting our initiative. So thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
As I was preparing for this interview, I was looking at all the amazing things Enwin has been involved in and some of the things that you spearheaded. And there was a really innovative project or program that you launched at Enwin through a chance meeting in the hallway of WeTech Alliance's office at the University of Windsor's Epicenter 3 years ago, or at this time, it might be 4 years ago. And this new project at Enwin Utilities has empowered employees and led to changes in how the utility company conducts its business. You're leading by example, Helga, when you're providing all these pieces of advice. So what advice do you have for companies looking to engage with future members of the workforce? And talk to us about this project.
Yeah, that was a bit of a journey also. It really was a chance encounter because I was at the university building for a completely different meeting and a completely different reason. And I ran into the WeTech folks who were, I think they were using space at the university at that time. It was great space because it was space for innovation. It was meeting space. It had open pods and that kind of thing. But as I said, I was there for a completely different reason, but got into a hallway chat with the folks from WeTech who were at that time coincidentally starting an innovation initiative and looking for companies. They had grant money and they were looking for companies to assist in promoting a new way of thinking, design thinking, and innovation in the organization. And it just happened at that time. And the reason we got in the conversation is because I'd had a couple of managers bring forward that they would like to start new initiatives on innovation at Enwin. So really it was fortuitous. I'd heard from the managers, and then I ran into the WeTech folks. And so we participated in their program and they taught volunteers from Enwin over a period of months how to do design thinking properly. Don't come to the solution right away, fully explore the problem. And they taught us how to do that. And so we've done two rounds of this. It was about 3 to 4 years ago, and we managed to do two rounds. And then, of course, the pandemic hit and it slowed us a little bit because you can do things virtually. But really, what the employees truly enjoyed and benefited from was the opportunity to meet their colleagues in other parts of the organization that they would otherwise not meet. And when they came up with an innovation, they could bounce that solution off of these other partners in other departments. And, you know, it allowed them to determine if that solution would help the other department, hurt the work of the other department, or if there was a better solution. And so they taught us the whole process, the initial kickoff, the ideation, generative ideas, the problem, you know, identify the problem to be solved and then work towards a solution. Some employees did it as individuals, still following the process, and others did it in team efforts. And it really brought us some great ideas through two rounds of this so far. The first year projects, and it takes a while to implement. Once you do something like this, the organization has to make a commitment to implement the changes that are accepted and recommended. You have to accept all of them. But once you do, there's a commitment there. So that's a big part of the process because 3 years later, we are, you know, largely finished the first year's ideas and we're well into implementing the ideas that came forward last summer. The process was well underway and then the pandemic hit. So it slowed down the delivery of the ideas just a little bit, but we still did it. It was still done. And many of those ideas actually revolved around improving the employee experience at Enwin. And I think that was maybe driven a little bit by the pandemic. Everybody was very concerned about safety and what was happening in the organization. And many ideas came forward about how to onboard employees, how to continuously train employees and so forth. So last year's ideas were the first round was a little more corporate focused and how to improve processes. The second round was quite focused on how to improve the employee experience. So all of them are valuable.
And what better way to improve that experience than to ask employees themselves on the front lines for their input?
Yep, that's right. That's what we hope to achieve.
So we're coming close to an end. And I have to admit, Helga, I was extremely nervous in preparing for our podcast. I've looked up to you for a number of years as I've been on my leadership journey and followed your career path closely. I've learned much more during this conversation that we've had in the last hour. And I'm just extremely grateful to you and your team at Enwin for your continuous support with Build a Dream and how you've influenced my own leadership journey. Your career pathway is so impressive and a great example to young women everywhere. You have worked both in the public and private sector. That being said, any advice for women looking to transition careers and any advice for women considering a career in the public sector?
Yeah, I would say that, first of all, don't be afraid to take risks and make a change. And don't be afraid to make a lateral move change. I have to say that I probably, over the course of my career, I talked about Herm Walker and Pricewaterhouse in the school board, and then I joined the city. And then I left the city and went to a private sector organization again and went back to the city and now Enwin. So I would say probably half of those moves at least were lateral moves. They didn't give me an increase in salary, but they gave me a new opportunity and a new experience. And so I really encourage people not to be afraid to do that. Very often a step sideways, even maybe a little bit backward, is a true step forward. And so people shouldn't be afraid to do that if it's a job you really want to do and try. Obviously, financial concerns are a factor, but if you're really trying to build a career, you need to make those changes. You need to make them very strategically, not, you can't do them every year because then it'll look like you can't keep a job and that doesn't work well on a resume. But certainly showing that you have multiple skills and can work in different sectors is actually looks very good. And you really are in an interview then able to describe what value you bring to an organization. So I guess my best advice, and I've done it myself, is don't be afraid of lateral moves and don't be afraid to take risks.
That is great advice, especially for the young women that are listening, and actually any woman at any point in her career, because mm-hmm. one thing that I've learned through my work at Build a Dream is how much fear stands in the way of the decisions that we make. And for someone that went back to school, then went into the public sector, and as you mentioned, with very little experience, and having then been the chief administrative officer for the city of Windsor, I think that overcoming that fear and that uncomfortable feeling that you may have when you want to try something new is so key to young women listening in, because it stands in the way of so many great experiences that you can have in your career pathway if you just overcame that fear.
Yeah. And let me do a quick shout out for both the public and the private sector. Both are great places to work. When I started my career, I was private sector all the way, didn't ever plan on getting into the public sector. And I really have to say that when you do work for the public and work in the public sector, it's a really good feeling to be part of your community and be serving people. It has certainly its challenges and a lot of critics, but overall, by and large, it gives you great satisfaction. And salaries in the public sector are sometimes lower than the private sector, but then there are also a wealth of benefits and, you know, retirement, pension, that type of thing. Whereas the private sector generally pays more. I don't think people realize, but it does. It generally pays more, but you might not get quite the same level of benefits in all cases. So there are pros and cons to both. Both are very rewarding, and I don't think you should make your career decisions. Looking back, I shouldn't have been overly focused on one or the other. I think you make your career decisions based on the best opportunity that's available to you at the time, regardless of the sector, and where you can learn the most and where you can offer the most. I really think that's what you have to do, and you build your career gradually over time.
And on that note, I have one last question before we wrap up, because you talked about making that strategic decision and kind of evaluating your options. Did you have a mentor or a sponsor that supported you through those decision-making opportunities?
Not really. I mean, I had mentors. They varied though over the years. They were usually part of the company that I worked for and helped launch me maybe, and, you know, gave me advice about the next level to move off to. Most of my sponsors and mentors in the early days were men. There were some women who really paved the path for female leaders in Windsor, and I really admired some of them. And I wouldn't necessarily call them mentors. I more watched them from afar and emulated some of the things I saw them doing, how they spoke and, you know, what their career path was. And so it's not all about, I mean, talking to people is great, and finding your support network where you can within your company or outside is also very valuable. But watch people is my advice. See how women speak, see how they present themselves, and, you know, the level of confidence that their messaging contains. And then, of course, for men as well, it doesn't matter, male, female, pick the leaders that you admire and figure out what it is in their work and their messaging that you do admire, and then perhaps follow that lead. I think you can't just rely on one mentor. It's a combination of things you observe around you that will lead you in the right direction.
Well, Helga, as I mentioned, you've been a role model that I've admired from afar. And I'm so glad that you've been able to share all your experience, some of your experience and wisdom with our audience. And again, thank you so much for all the work that you and your team do in the Windsor Essex community to help support the work at Build Essex community, to help support the work at Build a Dream and just diversify and succeed. It's been truly an honor speaking to you today.
Thanks very much, Noor. Big shout out to our staff in Water and Hydro. They've kept everything running during the pandemic, and I just want to recognize them. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.